Let's talk about the United States Conference of Mayors. The event happened a couple of months ago back in the, it was the first weekend of June. You guys all got together. I believe there's hundreds of you. So please just tell our listeners and our readers a little bit about what happened at that event. What is this conference all about? And what did you guys talk about? What are some of the ideas and solutions that you're hoping to bring back to Reno?
Well, we really talk about, you know, obviously what's happening in all of our cities, what's working in our cities, what isn't working in our cities. It's a very special time because mayors from across the country get to convene and come up with obviously solutions and platforms for, you know, getting onto the Hill and working with our federal delegations, but also just collaboration across the country. So we're all on the same page. It's one of the reasons why mayors are typically very strong, because we do band together. And what we do find out, I don't know if this would surprise people, but what we do find out is it doesn't matter the size of your city, we're all dealing with the exact same issues typically, whether it's infrastructure, public health, housing, crime, all those things. We all, like I said, it doesn't matter how big or small the city is, every mayor has the same exact issues. So when we get together, it's really an important time to collaborate and figure out what's working, what isn't working, and the vision as we move forward. Obviously, you know, because mayors do, you know, we're at the ground level, right? Our jobs can be incredibly exhilarating, but incredibly difficult too at the same time. So I think we have a different perspective, being local government, and cities are, I always say they're 24/7. And no disrespect to counties, but counties are to, you know, they're a little bit more 9-to-5. They don't like it when I say that, but it's just a different, I think it's just a different aspect of local government. So I think in the pandemic, a lot of people saw mayors sort of the go-tos in different cities and states, right? So leading the way across the nation. So it's important for mayors to convene and collaborate.
So I guess what were some of the big themes? I know you mentioned some of them, but what were some of the big issues, and were there any sort of solutions or ideas you're hoping to bring back?
Yes. So infrastructure is always a big one, obviously, with the ARPA dollars, CARES Act. It's really critical to figure out what is the best way to spend that money, because it's got a lot of stipulations with it. You know, for me, it's mental health. As the president of the Conference of Mayors, I think it's the number one issue in America is mental health and addiction. I think we're probably 30, 40 years behind, but I see it as the number one crisis in our country. And if you really think about it, if you don't have your mental health, what do you have? You have nothing. You don't have education. You don't have infrastructure. You don't have strong public, you know, public infrastructure, public health infrastructure. So many things, if you think about it, depend on strong mental health. And, you know, this country is really, really struggling, and the policies that we put in place have completely failed. And so we need to admit that and take a completely different approach if we're truly going to get serious about how we tackle this massive, massive crisis. Obviously, infrastructure, climate change, public safety, all of those are topics at, you know, top tier topics at the Conference of Mayors.
And I do want to ask you about mental health. And I know that it's not fair to necessarily lump Reno in all of this, because all of Nevada's counties are federally designated mental health provider shortage areas. And the state of Nevada actually ranks last in mental health metrics, like access to care, high prevalence of mental illness. And that's all to say, just to sort of set the stage of the challenge that we're facing here. So I know that the city of Reno and you have been very, you've been advocates to try to get more access to mental health. I'm thinking of the contract during the pandemic to give folks 13 and over free counseling via Talkspace. You know, the critics of that would say, you know, well, that's out of state kind of corporate thing that could have gone to locals, but and it's a one-year contract. So, you know, that was one idea. I'm just curious to know, what can the city of Reno do moving forward to help address mental health and mental health access?
Well, first of all, I do want to say it's important to always have your local providers at the table. More challenging in a pandemic because a lot of people were not comfortable going in person, right? Or there's other issues of why someone might not want to go seek therapy in person, right? The stigma, there's a huge stigma. I would say part of the that application, that technology also really was where you can have local providers, actually. They just have to sign up on the platform, which is really good, right? And also you have to be licensed in that state. And so there are requirements. So, you know, I kind of thought it was best of both worlds. And of course, I think anything you do, you're going to get criticized. That's just so, especially if you're in government, everything that we do, we get criticized, and that's okay. And that's, you know, sometimes that's how you get better. That's how you expand. It's also how you bring in more people. Like I really connected with a lot of the therapists and psychiatrists in our community whenever we did that. And also in the pandemic, you know, we were so used to dealing with our public safety experts. Like, let's say we're so used to fires and floods and things like that. Never before did we work with physicians and epidemiologists or had them at the table, right? That was a major shift. And I think it opened a lot of our eyes to see the lack of public health and the infrastructure. And it's one of the reasons why it was so hard to tackle, you know, a pandemic, right? So I think it teaches you a lot, even though it might not be perfect. But it's okay for people to criticize. I think that's how you get better. But as far as mental health goes, you know, everyone should have access. And I think every school should have, you know, walk-in therapists or, you know, like we have emergency ERs. Why don't we have, you know, emergency you know, mental health facilities or programs where you literally can walk in off the street. That is not the way that it is. Right now, we continue to treat, you know, some of our most sickest patients dealing with mental illness and addiction in our jails and in our hospitals. And I always talk about our hospitals are where they fix broken bones, not broken brains. It's a very, very complex problem. And it's one of the reasons why I think a lot of people have not wanted to even touch it for so many levels, because one size doesn't fit all. You can't just say, hey, we're going to build a homeless shelter right here and that's going to take care of everyone. I think you have to holistically diagnose each individual. Not everyone suffers from, you know, the same ailment, whether it's schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, those kinds of things, right? Or, like, you know, when we talk about homelessness, you cannot say that everyone is homeless for the same reason. There are a lot of seniors that we see that can fall right into homelessness because they're living on such tight fixed incomes. So to me, yes, it's going to be very intensive. It's going to be incredibly expensive to diagnose, you know, each individual, but that's really the only way that we're going to be able to comprehensively figure out what services they need, where they need to be, and how to treat and diagnose the problem.
Well, I guess I'm curious then, what can the city of Reno or cities in general do to sort of incentivize more mental health providers or to help create more access for mental health? I know it's not an easy solution. Is the answer just more money?
No, actually, you know, surprisingly, I know everyone's like, we need more money. Well, yeah, okay. That depends on what you're looking at, right? You need more money, obviously, if you're going to build infrastructure. The other thing I don't think people realize is that when the federal government gives that money, it goes to the state. It never, hardly ever comes into the city. And remember, the city is where we are dealing with these issues at ground zero. So we need to figure out a much better way to allocate it. And I'll just give you an example. I've been working on a 24/7 crisis mental health center for 6 years. And that money has been sitting at the state for 6 years. And so it's just taking way too long to get it into the hands of where we need it to go, where we can act, you know, fast and frequent. And then also typically the funds will go to the county. They don't go to the city. And we need to address that as well, because it needs to be equitable. But that way, again, we can take on these initiatives because we know it's there, but the way that it's allocated, it isn't helping our cities in the way that we need it to. But you talk about providers, right? How do we incentivize more people to go into mental health. And, you know, there's a few ways. I think you have to get to these students and incentivize them and say, hey, we would like to help you with your tuition. How can we incentivize you to go into this space? We're already going to lose a lot of care providers already. So I think we have to incentivize them and work with our universities and honestly, look at how we can give them also access to credits and things like that, that can help, right? In exchange, our push is going to be for 100,000 providers in mental health. And there's another thing that's interesting that we learned in the pandemic, again, something that we didn't know, but we did waive it at the time, and it should be long-term. And that was bringing in providers and specialists from outside our state. So if we want to make it easier for people to go into healthcare, or, you know, for physicians to come into our state, then we need to get rid of the red tape, right? That they need to have, you know, this licensing. There should be sort of a license across the board now more than ever when we see these shortages.
And I'll add that just because I've got some experience and I've talked to folks in this realm also, and this isn't necessarily a local issue, but just nationwide, there's an issue with Medicaid as well, where providers who take Medicaid clients, if they don't show, if those clients don't show up, the providers don't get paid. And so a lot of providers are not interested in accepting Medicaid clients. And that goes back to a lot of the folks who may be on the streets or maybe, you know, low income. So
that's why I was saying when we started out how complex this is. It isn't one, you know, just single issue. It's a lot of different issues that have this sort of combination effect of this perfect storm, right? And to your point, this affects all of the country. This is why we collaborate with mayors to find out what are the issues they're seeing. They're seeing the exact same thing, but you touched on Medicaid. The other issue is they pay some of the lowest rates. So a lot of people don't want to accept it, and that becomes extremely problematic. So again, there's a lot of inequity in mental health care. And until we bring that equitable, it's going to be very, very challenging. But that's what mayors are doing on the Hill, is that we're advocating as much as we possibly can. Again, I think it's the number one crisis. And I don't see right now at this point it getting better. If you just walk, you know, on a city street in any city, you know, you can see people that are seriously struggling and need help. And so, and to me, to leave them on the street is incredibly inhumane.
I want to ask about that because you did talk about that in a MSNBC appearance that you were on back in June. And actually, I have a quote. I rewatched it today. I just want to read this statement that you made during that speech. You said, "The policies we're using today are very, very broken.
We've got to bring back, you know, acute care hospitals. You know, treating our mental illness in our jails is absolutely not working. And quite honestly, leaving people on the streets the way that we see our cities right now is very, very cruel, inhumane. It's a humanitarian crisis, and we need to do something completely different."
So I have maybe a more policy wonkish kind of question because, you know, I guess what can we do moving forward? What kind of policies can we think about? Because, you know, when I think of homelessness in the city of Reno, I look at some of the decisions being made, whether it was the removal of the benches from downtown bus station or the demolition of weekly motels throughout the city, you know, and I'm just curious to know, like, what is the city of Reno doing to try to address homelessness, and what kind of policies would you advocate for, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, like, it's not just one thing. I mean, because we talk, right? Like, look at low paying jobs and then not being able to afford housing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot. It's very, very complex. So it's not just one thing. So there are a lot of issues. I would say, first of all, we have got to build more transitional housing. We do not have this infrastructure in place, and we are not allocating. And I'm just saying, as a country, we are not allocating the infrastructure that we need to address this problem. And one is to make sure, again, having access to treatment, right? The the drugs today are so incredibly strong. You know, we talk about it all the time. One pill kills, and it can kill, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. That's a weapon of mass destruction. We don't treat it as such. And there is a narrative out there. Let's, you know, talk about the motels. Let's, you know, those were built at a 40-year shelf life. I've been in them. They were horrific. That is not a way for people to live. I don't want everyone to think that everyone is a bad motel owner. They're not. But what we saw was these people taking advantage of some of our most vulnerable, charging them $400 a week. Do the math. That is crazy, with bed bugs, 30-year-old bedding, conditions that can make someone so incredibly sick because they don't have the money to do so. But also that infrastructure, you cannot continue to have dilapidated infrastructure and then talk about, you know, health reasons, right? And that's why, and then we talk about housing and people will say, Mayor Sheehy, we need more affordable housing. Absolutely, we do. But what people don't also realize is that you need housing of all types. It's about economics 101, which is supply and demand. Because if you only have a certain type of supply, the people that can afford that supply will dominate that supply because they can afford to do so. So do you see why it's important to have housing of all types? Because then people get upset about, oh, you're building, you know, higher end housing. Well, again, those people that can afford that housing, they're dominating the other housing, the lower level housing that other people could afford to be in when you don't have enough supply and demand, right? So housing becomes a very big issue. And then lower wages, like we talk about, right? And actually, I'm really impressed with, you know, some of the work that EDON is really dedicated saying to companies, we are not going to incentivize you to come to Nevada if you don't pay a certain wage, right? I think the system is very broken. We've got to start incentivizing people, because what happens, what I see happening, there are a lot of people that are working, but they make too much money to qualify for a subsidy, and they would never make enough money to qualify for a mortgage, right? So all of this is very, very complex. But I would say we've got to start addressing transitional housing, because we, in this country, most cities have adopted the housing first model. I've seen it firsthand. It doesn't work. Not for everyone. Some people it works great for. So that goes back to my point, diagnosing everyone to figure out what it is that they need. And there's this big, huge gap of care and long-term care and providers that are going to bring in case management. There are people that need medications to, you know, so that they can stay stable. So it has to be, again, you have to look at the individual, and that's what we're not doing. I think we're really lumping everyone into one box and saying, this is what it looks like. But again, it's going to take a lot of resources. It's going to be very expensive, but it's something that we desperately need if we truly want to change the way that, you know, mental health, homelessness, and addiction really play a part in this country.
For sure. And I want to just talk about housing for a second. Obviously, you don't have control over the grand economic scheme of things here. You don't set prices or anything. You're not the one who's in charge of, you know, rising house prices. But I am curious, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we need housing of all types, and you've got folks who can afford it sort of dominating the market, as you say. But this area is also growing. And so I'm just curious, if we're focusing or building more of the higher end or market rate housing, isn't that incentivizing essentially more people to come here that can afford it? And it kind of further exacerbates the problem?
Well, you are seeing a huge influx of people coming here. We saw that during the pandemic, right? And that's the other thing, is Reno's what they call a breakout city. You know, I see your point, but again, it comes down, if you have plenty of supply, what happens? Landlords are forced to come down in rent because they're sitting vacant, right? So that's where you start to see the market shift. Again, it's all in supply. And then what's happened is, you know, a lot of people forget, but in the recession in 2008, a lot of people left here because they needed to go find jobs. We were the highest in foreclosure and unemployment. And a lot of people were in the construction industry. So we haven't been able to bring them back. And then in this economy, you're seeing supply, you know, supplies, the cost of wood be incredibly expensive. So we're still not building nearly the amount of housing that we need to keep up with the demand. And again, to your point, then there's another demand of people from the outside coming here. And one of the reasons why it is attractive is because Reno can provide a great quality of life. Our air quality is really good. Our backyard playground, I say, is one of the best in the country. You know, we kind of have this lifestyle, like best of both worlds, where in the day, I say, you know, we work hard, we play hard, but there's a lot of people that come here for a great quality of life. But we also, at the council, it's very hard for us to be able to predict those market conditions. And so really, you have to remember, most of housing comes in on the private side. And then today we do see a lot of what they call NIMBYs, right? Wow. Not in my backyard. So you get a lot of pushback. And that's why I did an initiative called 1,000 Homes in 100 Days within the McCarran ring to build up and not out, to avoid sprawl. There's still a lot of areas in our city that are dilapidated that we, you know, need to build up, right? And then I think working as private-public partnerships to say, hey, if you build this, will you take vouchers? We're doing that a lot at the city. Usually every project that comes in, we say, you know, if this is not affordable, will you donate to the Affordable Housing Fund? Those types of ways in which we can continue to keep building affordable housing. And how we've done that at the city, because we haven't had a lot of money. When I got into office, we were $600 million in debt. So it's very hard to, you know, be a player in the space. But what we did have was land. And most of our land went to affordable housing. And a lot of that too was trying to find developers that can build it. Not everyone will build it, which is also really challenging when there's only a few people in the space that know how to do it. They have to go after tax credits. It can be incredibly, laborious initiative for a developer to go after. So it's not easy, and it takes a long time to put a shovel in the ground. And as you know, prices, like you've talked about, have gone up dramatically, and cost of land is very expensive.
Just on the developer side and the supply side of things, you know, I guess I'm just trying to put my developer hat on here. And, you know, if I have a project where my prices and my costs are rising, I don't see much incentive to build an affordable housing unit. You know, I would obviously want to build a higher end or a luxury one. So how do you incentivize developers to do more affordable housing? And then also on top of that, what kind of impact have you seen from the affordable housing fund that you have with the city of Reno?
Yeah. So that's a great question. That's why we try to come into a project with land and say, hey, we have land. Is this something that you can do? And it is hard because the cost, right? And to pay workers to get workers, because there are people working, you know, there's a lot of people working, right? So that's another issue that we see, is trying to get contractors to the space. So that's difficult as well. It's not just one issue, but where the city can play a part is looking at land for housing. And again, then you say, hey, can you dedicate so many units, right? Because that's how, you know, sometimes you can work with them. Or workforce housing. Again, a lot of those people make too much money to qualify for a subsidy, and they don't make enough for a mortgage. And so you want to focus on housing of all types. But that's where the city, I think, has been able to be pretty successful, is coming in with some of the land. And then also with the ARPA and CARES Act dollars, you know, we bought a motel so that we could do transitional housing there for veterans, those types of things, because that's not long-term housing. You know, some of that. We did Sage Street, and we've, you know, bought more units coming in from Sage Street. And that's a pretty big project. You know, I think there's 300 units right there alone that the city brought in. But also, you know, most of the housing doesn't come in from the government side. It comes in from the private side. And those are the ones that typically know how to do it. It's not usually a space that the city is in other than being at the housing authority. They're looking at a very old, dilapidated project that we have of 100 units. And they're saying, hey, this doesn't really, you know, the conditions of these units are not where they should be for today's standard. So we're redoing the whole project and adding another 100 units. So now that'll be 200 units instead of the 100 units. Those are the kinds of ways that we need to think forward and more probably in today's terms.
Absolutely. And I know this is a complicated topic with lots of different sort of connections. Mayor Sheevy, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much.